is February 16th. This is Philosophy of the Rav. And the book I designed for Rav Aaron Lichtenstein is called Logic of the Heart and the Mind. And what I assigned is this book vis-a-vis what his brother of Yosha Bear writes about education has some representation in this third assignment, okay? The basic thesis that they share in common is that while there are various institutions of leadership, there's political leadership, there's judicial leadership, right? There's legislative leadership, you know, we have the separation of powers in America, not so much in Israel, so we have to be careful about and reserve our perhaps our harshest criticism of a system that might be anathema to us if they don't have that separation of powers that we have in America. But okay, I'm not going to get into politics now. But these various systems of leadership, you might say, you know, the best leadership is to convince people to be their own leaders. Yeah? But be that as it may, the Rav's point was that the most important leadership in Israel, in a Jewish society, is the Kohen and the Navi, much more importantly than the Melech and the Shofet. Remember the Rashi Tevos I gave you to remember the four is Mishkan? Because the whole point of leadership is to teach the people how to be a Mishkan for the holiness of Malchut Shaddai. Right? So, of course, you need the Melech and the Shofet to keep people in line. Right? You see, I think you can see very clearly what's happening in our own city, what happens when you start to slowly break down expectations. Right? When you step to people, understand, I take the train now to my house here, then from here to Stern, and Stern back home. There's never a day where I don't see many examples in my car, forget about what's going on in all the other cars, of real antisocial behavior. There's 10 people in the car with their phone on loud, music or listening to a television show or something. It's crazy.
Antisocial.
So it's something. I'm sitting there. I remember this morning. I'm sitting there with my Gemara, and there's a lady looking across from me with rolling her eyes because the guy right standing is watching a show loud.
On the subway.
It was a television. It was in English. And she's rolling her eyes at me. You know, as if she's trying to communicate to me that, yeah, this is bad behavior. Right? But it's I mean, tell you, and I live on Manhattan's west side where it's, you know, pretty upscale. Nobody stops for red lights anymore. I'm warning you. Probably hear what's worse. Do not, when your light is just turning green, just think that means now I can go. You've got to look both ways when your light is green. Because they're going not through yellows, they're going through reds that changed 3-4 seconds ago. I want to save your life. Alright? This happens to me on the way to shul every morning. I pass because there's a guy selling fruit, and people driving can't see that there's someone waiting to cross the street. If I were going to just walk out because it's green, I'm getting hit by a car almost every day. If I cross on the other down the other side where I can see from a distance whether a car is coming, taking his life. So you gotta have some sense of the Melech and the Shofet. This is manifest in Pirkei Avos. Pray for the Shalom of your Malchus, because if not for the Emes HaMalchus, right? If not for the fear that someone's going to give you a ticket if you go through that red light, more and more people are going to die. Right? The Mishnah lists it as people will swallow each other up like fish. This is small potatoes compared to where this is going. It has to get really bad before some people just start to say, I have to do something. I lived through the 70s and 80s and 60s. I know this. It's cyclical. All right? Okay, so this is all about the Kohen and the Navi convincing the people to be good teachers. It's
It's maybe a little tangential, but have you seen a change over the years about people's attitudes towards others and following the rules and not?
So, I lived through three major blackouts in New York. Right? First one in 1967, I'm really remembering so well. But I lived through the one in 1977. It was massive. Looting. I saw it. The images for less than 24 hours. The first one was in the winter, the other two were in the sun. And then there was one, I think, 2002, I think, from the sun.
No, it had to be 2004 or something, because I remember going on a trip and my family told me that.
Whatever it is, shortly after 2001. I must tell you, it was a different city, and I wrote about this. It's in one of my books. That what happened in between, I think that 9/11 brought us together. After the second, there was no looting at all. And everybody was standing on corners with water and helping out people and saying, can I, with signs, can I help you upstairs, can I help you up? I'm not saying I traveled the whole city, but I was part of that and walked around and it was just a totally different city. And now I'm telling you, we're getting back to that kind of, we have to fight for our turf. We've got, and there's a lot of culture wars where everything is broken down between the oppressed and the oppressors. And by the way, you know where Jews fall in that. We're the oppressors. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go political on you here, but you asked. So I supplemented this by saying you have to be careful because this A here, when you give that much power to someone, they'll do anything to hold on to it. Okay? So, I mean, if you recall, I created a continuum between David, Shlomo, and Rechavam that led to the split in the kingdom. Right? But this is just the irony of it. It's a sort of a moralistic twist that all three of them are responsible for the split in the kingdom. Rechavam, of course, is the one who split it by refusing to back down on the demands of the people. But morally, what did Shlomo and David do that sort of created a continuum of, oh, of course Rechavam was going to behave that way, because look what his father did. He made people think, gasping people in the room, think that he has the right to cut a baby in half. Remember I spoke about that? Right? And David had the chutzpah to adjudicate between Mephibosheth and Tziva when he said, just split the field. In both cases, there's a Gemara that says, oh, really? So quickly you could just say split? All right, split your kingdom. I hope you can see the deeper meaning when the Gemara does that. It's meant to teach you it's an irony. If a king can behave this way, it's all about what's going to be in this man's mind when he hears the people's demands about lowering taxes and going easy on us. Someone whose father did X and someone whose grandfather did Y, it's not an irony that he's going to make the wrong decision. Because that's better the Melech Evyon as opposed to the Melech Elyon. Right, that I hope you read by now in your Solich. Okay. And that's why Shaul loses his kingdom, even for such a minor infraction. That's crazy. The prophet does not tell David after what he did with Bathsheba, with Uriah. He killed Uriah with a number of other men. How do you not lose your kingdom over that? But Shaul loses his kingdom because he didn't wait the full week for Shmuel when he brought the carbon and fighting the Christian. I can picture Shaul looking at all that and saying, God, this is not fair. Right? I mean, there is that David's sin is a sin of passion, it's a sin of
a lot of things on the second side of the Aseret HaDibros, right? But it's not on this level where Shaul made it look like we're winning this war because I'm going to be the partner. I came late on purpose, maybe Shmuel would say. I'm testing you. And then you blame it everything on the people? That's not a game. Right? We win our wars because the prophet is bringing the korban. Okay? So that's a crucial point about answers number one and two for the third week. Okay? Three and four, we did all this. Just read inside the rough. Okay? Okay, basically, are you familiar with, there's a Rashi that says in Parshas Va'era, it says, who Moshe Va'aron, who Aaron Moshe. Sound familiar? And Rashi writes, from here we see that they were shkulim. Wait a second, who's shkulim to Moshe? So, I'm making a diuk. Rashi did not use this word. If he used this word, that would be philosophically problematic, certainly according to the Rambam. The Rambam considered a tenet of faith that you have to believe that Moshe is the greatest specimen of humanity that has ever lived. Why does that become an article of faith? What if I think that Yeshayahu was greater than Moshe? Be careful, the Christians and Muslims who said that Moshe has been superseded. So it's an article of faith. Okay. Fair enough. But isn't Rashi saying that Aharon is Moshe's equal? Rashi never said that. Give me a good English word for Moshe and Aharon being shkulim. They are, good, use the etymology. They are
balanced.
Good. Balanced. Complementary. He's giving you a five there. Complementary with an E, right? They complement each other. That's very big in Rav Soloveitchik's writings. Remember the spiritual leadership of Aaron, the religious leadership of Moshe. Okay, very important in the Rav. Which is why he comes down so hard on Korach, the Rav said, because, you know, Korach makes sense. On this, On this, Shimshon Raphael Hirsch also wrote very much about this, and it's going to come up again and again. What Shimshon Raphael Hirsch did for German sensitivities of Torah in Germany in 1830, 1840, 1850. Anybody able to Breuer's? Anybody talking about Shimshon Raphael Hirsch? Breuer's is named after him, right? Breuer's Green. So he presented the Torah to a community that started to emerge from the ghetto and started to be emancipated and started to, you know, spread out and hope that they could, you know, create a better life for Jews. Didn't turn out so well for the Jews in Germany in the end, he's going to come up again and again that things that Rav Soloveitchik wrote about these kind of sensitivities shows up in the writings of Shimshon Raphael Hirsch also, because they had similar tasks. Right? I would say that Shimshon Raphael Hirsch's task was to present a Judaism for Orthodox that could counter Reform. But Soloveitchik had to do that to counter Conservative. Conservative Judaism exists in America. It's an American invention, the conservative movement, and it was born out of the first graduating class of the Hebrew Union College. They only served shellfish and pork and milchus and fleshus mixed together at the smicha of the first graduating class of the Reform. No kosher food was available. That was their point. It was in 1879. Is that certain eating kosher food is ruining us and our attempt to bridge the differences between the Jew and the Gentile.
Right? It says so in the Torah. Yes, the Torah was man-made. We're man, too. It's part of their moral philosophy. And there were many Jews in America who attended this, who wanted to reform and remake the Jewish scene. So they called it conservative. You get it? We want to conserve what this movement is letting go of. Okay? So until, let's say, recently, relatively recent, until about 1980 or so, yes, Orthodoxy as conservative reform is out the window. But now, conservative moved much, 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 much closer all around to reform. Right? So the Rav Soloveitchik, he probably did not have much to what did he add to the fight against the reform movement? That's old potatoes. It was really the conservative movement. I've spoken to conservative Jews from 30, 40 years ago. They've gone to the mikveh, keeping kosher, keeping Shabbos. What ruined it? You should be aware of this name. His name is Jack Wertheimer. You should at least know the name. Anybody ever hear of him? Jack Wertheimer is a conservative rabbi, but he's historian. And he writes very critically of the following decision made in 1951, where Jews started to move out to the suburbs, and an official responsa was written from JTS's Jewish Theological Seminary, which is the flagship, which is conservative movement's YU. And the question was, we live out in the suburbs, I think it was Ulit at the time, something like out in Long Island. There is no shul in any walking distance. Is it better not to go to shul, or is it better to drive to shul? But the answer should have been zoned for a shul. Don't move out there until, and in the meantime, meet in someone's basement to get a Torah and have minyan in someone's house.
Isn't that halacha
too? Huh? Yeah, that's
right. Whatever it is. For sure.
Yeah, okay, so a Jewish neighbor needs a mikveh, needs a mikveh, he can drive to, she needs to go Friday night or Yontif, okay, what are you going to do? Alright, you need all kinds of things. So the tshuva went out in 1951, better to drive to shul. Now, the Reform Jews were driving to shul in 1931, but the conservative Jews want to keep Shabbos. Right? Their creed is they have to keep Shabbos, according to Talmudic law. Right? So this tshuva, Jack Wertheimer writes, Google him, you see. He's a conservative rabbi, but he writes regarding the conservative movement's machinations in the American scene. So he says that this historic conservative Jews is guaranteed that within a short time, those Jews are going driving to shul. How long was it going to take before they're driving to the park afterwards? Or they're driving to the theater afterwards? And then they're not going to shul at all, so they had to make their main service Friday night. Shabbos is for enjoyment. Right? To this day, the main service of Reformed Conservative Jews is Friday night. Not their flagship service is not the Shabbos morning. Right? So Rav Soloveitchik had to contend with a lot of that. And whether or not he did could he have done more to keep more Jews within Orthodoxy rather than But I'll say it this way, is that he had the intellectual prowess to speak to them in ways they would never hear from anyone in Chaim Berlin, Torah Das, Lakewood. No one there ever cared to talk to someone in the conservative world. But for all of the history that I see some of you may be asking now, rabbis were sent from this institution to conservative shuls with the instruction that you should try to make it Orthodox.
From YU.
If you can't, after a certain amount of time, you should leave. Right? There were rabbis who had smicha from here who were, the point is not just to be smicha, but to recruit, to send you places.
What's the point of reaching out to a community which doesn't want to hear anything different than what they're doing already?
At least if you have dialogue, it means that there's something to talk about. I just initiated a dialogue with a conservative rabbi in my neighborhood just yesterday. I called him because he was quoted in the Wall Street Journal saying that he stopped saying the bracha for the Medina, and he's not inviting anyone in the Israeli government to come to a shul. It's a huge shul in Manhattan. He's not inviting anyone from the government because the government, he says, has gone rogue. So I called him just with the courtesy to say, I just want to make sure you were quoted right. Because yes, I did sign that letter. It was signed by 200 blessing reform certain rabbis. And I just, and so he said that there are Kahanist elements in the Israeli government now, and I think it's a government rogue. Roguish government, and their decisions with respect to the Supreme Court are antithetical to my sensitivities, and therefore I want nothing to do with them, and we stopped saying the Brachot. So I thought, listen, you know, over the years, the Israeli government has done things that I thought were misguided and mistaken, but what does it mean that every time? Now Obama's president, now this part of my shul doesn't want me to say the Brachot for America. Now Trump is president, now this part of my shul doesn't want me to say. What does that mean? You're supposed to be a leader, and we have to be consistent about this.
Is that not?
So he said, but so his point was that because of Ben-Gvir and because of the Supreme Court, he wants nothing to do with Israel, and it got so much press, Forward wrote about it, and the Wall Street Journal, Thomas Friedman just yesterday wrote that he's sure that capital is going to leave Israel by the billions because of this racist government that they have now. So this is what I asked him yesterday, because I started the dialogue. I said, the previous government of Israel, the last 2 years, had an Arab party in the government. Why didn't you pull out then? Because I admire that Arab party. And he quoted me something that the Arab party said on their platform, that Israel has the right to exist, and therefore we're the party government. So now he's in trouble, because that governing party has a whole litany of statements that are horrifically racist about Jews. And he's not aware of it. It's that you are able to muster the strength to say Bracha from Medina, and those statements were made, it was quite public. So it's cynical. I'm just trying to argue with him is that when you make statements like that in the public, in the press, which just adds fire to the fuel of the anti-Israel sentiments, which turn out to be anti-Semitic, right? All this being said, I just want you to know that Yisroel Soloveitchik was studying this semester was a profound dove when it comes to Israel politically. I'll give you an example on an entrance. His brother, with respect to the peace process started after he died. But his brother of Aaron Soloveitchik was a hawk. So we're very different about Israel. But Soloveitchik, at an RCA convention right after the Six Day War, very publicly said, having the Kotel in our hands is a wonderful thing. But if we can determine that relinquishing the Kotel, just giving it up, would save lives, I would be up for it. I would say we should do something. I think it's a halakhic statement. Determination is how do you know it's going to be saved lives. We find now that the Arabs who were on Harabais, they didn't put up a fight at all. Only white flags there. And in Hebron, by the way. Because 29 was not so long before. People in living memory remember what they did in Hebron. There was no war in Hebron, no fight in Hebron. No fight on Harabais. They expected us to take over Harabais. No, we didn't. So they went on the war path. Jordan makes now, in case a Jew cares to document about that. Frankly, Rav Soloveitchik, and I must say, I agree, halachically, because I've been asked many times for people I know who do tours up there to go and just take a walk up at Harabais, and I say, I can't.
Get me the ashes of the Paraduma and I'll go up there. I pass him a remote with Yosha Bear Salvation, but it was wrong, not only halachically, but that it's provocation to go up there. I must tell you, there are posted here at this school now who say it's a mitzvah to go up there, even though I agree with your salvation's psak and halacha, because we have to create some kind of facts on the ground.
How can that be
the same as
mitzvah and
they agree with your salvation's psak? Because it's called Horasha. So Russia, it must be genius.
It becomes your property in my affairs. It's like a...
Well,
tell me if you don't have the right to address.
Maybe it's a suffix, maybe it's not exactly
good deal.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, I think of salvation being very much against today, very much against going on to our lives. But, be it as it may, the Rav Soloveitchik said very publicly to hundreds of rabbis right at the 60, he was euphoria at the time. It was the end of June 1967, and he said, we'll let the Moshe Dayan and the politicians, you know, sort it out. But I would say that if the determination can be made that this would save lives, I say, Bacha is relinquish the coat. He didn't use the Lashon, give it back. Give it back is also means that it was theirs. It was never theirs. We relinquish it in the interest of peace. Right? I just want one last thing is that I have had dialogue with some sheikhs in Hebron. I can't tell you who, because they will be getting killed if a name comes out that is talking to Jews. Right? These are good guys. They're just and moral, but they're stuck in a place where any positivity about Israel gets them in trouble. And we have dialogue about Avraham, about Ishmael and Yitzchak, even about Yaakov and Esau. Okay? Here is what these good guys say. You know there was never a temple on that mountain. Not from Solomon, and not from the second Temple. You know in your heart of hearts that there was never a temple there. And I said, how do you know it's in my heart? He said, I know 100%. There's no way there was ever a temple there. Anyone say where he's coming from? And you know that the politicians, every politician in the Knesset, well, not everyone now, but a lot of politicians, and Moshe Dayan, and all, they knew there was never a temple up there. Go ahead, what's this for?
There's a mosque.
They know that mosque is not as old as we claim the temple is. The mosque can't be older than Muhammad. No, what do you think? He says, because if the Jewish people thought there was a temple up there, they never would have given up that place at Harabayas. This is our proof.
I'm so sure. So much. I think it'd be worth more sponsor.
Oh, this is great. Spring Shabbaton.
Yeah, Spring Shabbaton. So, gentlemen, hi, Ruben Bashek here. For those of you who aren't in my psychology class, get a whole bunch of them here. We're having an epic JSS-IBC Shabbaton next Shabbos. We're going to have enhanced food. We are working on enhancing the food. It could be that we'll be having some smoked salmon and my famous jerky. We're going to try to make sure that that's going to be happening, as well as other enhancements to the menu, which everybody can enjoy that. Number two, we're going to have a whole bunch of different Rebbeim on campus. Besides Rabbi Rocha, who lives here, Rabbi Green will be here, I will be here, Rabbi Becker will be here, Rabbi Yitz Lieberman, who lives in the neighborhood, might be here, Rabbi Ari Wasserman will probably be joining us for a meal. It's really going to be a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous Shabbos. It's going to be epic, because it says so on the flyer. And that's a quote. You can either sign up by either counting the QR code. The URL is Epic JSSIBC Shabbos. Pretty easy to remember. And the flyers are either up there in the IBC chat, and we'll also have the flyers hanging out around here also. It's really going to be a lot of fun.
Epic spring
in Shabbaton. Right? So it's as opposed to out Shabbos. JSS had out Shabbos last week where that guys went to different Rebbeim's houses.
Yeah.
So now it's a spring in Shabbos, so it's going to be in for Shabbos.
Okay.
Very good. So we found that, and that's a vote then. Good to see you all. Good to see you all again from Basement Initial from Psychology and Author Class. Have a good one, guys. Thank you.
So what do you think? You know there was never a temple up there.
You know, he told me something I never knew. I've studied a little bit of Islam, studied more Christian stuff, Bible disputations. But he told me something I never knew about Muslims. They believe that every Friday, Sarah, Avram's wife, Sarah, goes into every kitchen, every Islamic kitchen, and puts a spice in their food to make their Friday food taste good. We don't have such a tradition.
Why do they even acknowledge their father as the mother of Israel?
Because they love Sarah, they love Abraham. Yitzchak is very big in Islam. Go to Maran Machpelah. Yitzchak's place is much bigger than the others. It really is. It's all Islamic. That's why my son-in-law was a Kohen. So he's a big Machpelah. His psak is, his Rebbe said, you can't go to Maran Machpelah. But all his father does. We're up here in America. Maran Machpelah is it's a roof. But I'm missing out from maybe buried someplace else, a big suffix that they're buried. I don't know, these nice red and white stripes. Anyway, so he says, you know there was no temple there. So that's what the Rabbanim here is saying. It's Hora Shah. Look what they're saying. We have to show that we believe there was a temple there. You get it? That within the framework of Pesach Halacha, maybe Rav Soloveitchik was not into that kind of thing. You don't do with that kind of hurrah, Shah. Who can give a hurrah like that? Eliyahu Navi? Who can give a hurrah today to bring a korban in Har Carmel today? Right? Be careful, the Rav would say. That's a slippery slope. Right? But that's what they're saying today. Right? You see the both sides? Okay. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, shortly before he passed away, it's so crazy because I got into trouble over this meeting. It was during the peace process in 1993, right? And about 25 or so rabbis from, I'd say, all the far right here in America met in my shul. Why was my shul? Because it's just centrally located. But I got into trouble because it was quoted in the Hebrew press. I don't think it made it in any English press. It was quoted in Hebrew press. And I was there in the room. I remember some of the rabbis who said so. Suggested. Never came out as a Mekid in the minutes of the meeting. So I don't know who at this meeting spoke to the press. Someone suggested that a Pesach Halacha should go out, that Rabin and his government have a din of Rodev. Because the Rambam passes that if anybody is threatening the monetary, the parnasa, the livelihood of Jews, not just their lives, threatening their livelihood, that person is a rodef. Be careful. Rodef can be, usually rodef means habala harbucha, shame our game. I was in the room. Now, I was at the time, 93, I'm about 30, 32. Right? I was definitely maybe 20, 30 years the youngest person in the room. It was my shul, so I was there. I'm quite sure if it was someone else's shul, I wouldn't have been invited. Right? So you have all these gedolim and all these big rabbis, 70 and up, discussing whether or not we should paskin that the rabbin government has a din of rodeo. Right. It was just a few months later that Rabin was assassinated. Okay, which is what he's supposed to do to a rodef. So I'm in the room.
The government was a rodef, or that like
the government is acting like rodef. Why? Because they're giving up territories that are destroying the livelihood of hundreds and hundreds, even thousands of Jews.
What about we call that official? Took out the question.
Yeah, the point is that an Israeli government, or any government, has the right to decide what's best for saving lives. A government that decides, for instance, to spend more money on armaments than on cancer research is making a value statement about what's important for our people that's going to cost lives, or maybe save lives. to avoid the next war, or I don't know, whatever. Governments are appointed to make those decisions. Right? So you in here comfortably in America, where you're not sending your boys to the army, I remember Aaron Soloveitchik was paralyzed on one side. There's one arm dragged up his. And he held his arms. And he says the word he used, it would be a bechia the doyrus. Remember what that Lashon comes from? Bechia the doyrus is the Lashon in Medrash, and Medrash that when the Meraglim came on the night of Tisha B'Av. It says, by Yivku Balayla. Rashi cites the Gemara, you Tisha B'Av, you cried over nothing. God, that same night is going to give you reason to cry. Bechia the doyrus. Aaron said, "It'll be a bechia l'doros if anybody finds out that we suggested that the government of Israel is a rodent." As much as he was a hawk, he understood you can't rabbis, be careful. Be shamu, watch your words. And someone at that meeting must have spoken to the press. Because it came out and it said, the rabbi said that the Jews wrote it, and it was took place in congregation where it said again. I kept the article. I have it on file on the early peace process. But that's about our authority. His, thank God, his weight carried, because they did not make it an official resolution of that meeting. That would have been a bechir l'doros if after the assassination, they said, see, they gave up psak halacha. Now the guy who did assassinate him had just before that attended a shiur at Bar Ilan on the din of Rodin. They were up to the sugi in Sanhedrin. Right, the Bar Ilan, which talks about the din of Rodin. He, in his twisted mind, decided that I'm going to take that to the road.
Could you create a government kind of like a kingship and then Tigay Mathis, and then they then have the right to do et cetera, et cetera?
They were Yoshi, so they felt that they, you know, some of us felt it was a joke at the right time. But yes, he thought that yes, Shofet is the Mathis, and a duly elected government that's serving, you know, by the will of the people in this case. What we might have to mean is that perhaps if the president, perhaps the prime minister, dies in office, maybe there's a fear of a Kriya to the people. So, possible. But, there's a lot written on that, and it's not just from the right. Okay, here is, I always, the conversation here always just takes me away, so I'm having a good time, I hope you are. But Rav Aaron was, in his book on Jewish education, so vocal about the protection of the least among us. It's something so totally Jewish about us. And why the worst calumny of the Torah is reserved for Amalek. Because what's Amalek after all? I thought me for Yogeya, Kohanetasholim. Nechesh Sholim is a haphaz. The word never appears again in the Bible. I think what Nechesh Sholim is, it's a metathesis. There are over 100 words like this in the Torah, and it's not. Right? Nachum refers to plodos, on fire. It's not plodos, it's lapidos. Right? Keves, Kesev, Simla, Salma. Right? There are over 100 words like this in the Torah, in the Tanakh, where the words, the letter switches. Right? I think Nechesh Sholim is Nechesh Loshir. Weak words. Okay. The Germans' first claim of those who deserve to die, and this is in Mein Kampf, 1919. First people that deserve to die are the weak ones who don't put in their as much as they take out from society. So did we realize that the Jew puts in much more than he takes out with his intellect. So what was his war against the Jews? He writes in my account.
Conscience.
Because the Jew has a conscience. The Jew won't let me do that. I have to kill every Jewish baby because 40 years from now, one of those babies is going to grow up into an intellectual Jew who is going to convince people that what I did in destroying all those weak ones was wrong. So then he had to make it that they're responsible for the inflation, and they're responsible for the twisted political movements, they're responsible for the answer. But the Iker point was that they will, with their filthy, despicable thing called conscience, will prevent me from my common sense protection of society, to get rid of all those weak ones. Right? So Aaron says, like, imagine this, your house is only as safe as your weakest lock. So too, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. Right? So we have to take it, so this is my Haggadah, I think it's at this farm sale. Is it Four Sons Haggadah? It's new. Its thesis is that it's four Haggadahs in one. And every page has four approaches to whatever it is I'm dealing with. The wise son, the withdrawn son, that's the Shinu de Elisha, the pure son, that's what I call the Tum, and the cynical son, I call him wicked. He came to the standard, he's not wicked. The cynical, though, he needs a specific kind of answer. You have to give four different answers depending on how you feel. Or what were you talking to, right? The thesis, and I write in the beginning, my introduction, thesis is based on this chapter of that I assigned to you of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. He says that it's Atpesachlo, the role of the woman in bringing out the one who's withdrawn. Okay? So that's a very important thesis of his. So attached to my shul is a school for autistic children. I know some of you may ask, why are you speaking? It costs $105,000 each kid is attending. That's what the government pays. Most of them are getting like 90% of that from the government. Right? And what are we doing? We have a special annex to teach them how to use the bathroom, to teach them how to make sandwiches, and hopefully those kids will function. Maybe even get married. Why are we spending all this money to teach someone to tie his shoes? The answer is, that's what a just society does. Put ourselves into great inconvenience to protect the weakest ones. And that's what this article is about.
Yeah. That's to defend Hitler, but it's kind of something social Darwinism, which we built America based on in our past. Survival of the fittest, the weakest.
Yeah, but okay, the Torah knows that competitive spirit does make a better product, but be careful. Competition led to the first one brother killing the brother. So we have to institute certain frameworks to create not competition, but vatranut alongside competition, not just unbridled. How do you create vatranut? Interest. So the fools can go to their table, leave them on the ground, leave the bundles on the ground, leave the corner of the field, tied, so you get the picture. You leave your whole land fallow for a year. And you're going to look and say, oh, I'm going to do that. How can I leave my store closed on Shabbos? Shabbos is the biggest day. Okay, not everything is on making more money.
Okay, in it for you.
So it's easy for me to say, right? Because I have no money. So that's what the Torah hopes to do, is to create. Otherwise, God should have just told Cain, you know, Cain, you're right. I'll give you what I gave Hevel. You're right. I see it means a lot to you. Okay. No. God tells Cain, try harder, buddy. You've got it in you. I know you can do it. We talked about Cain Hevel, I think, at the very beginning. All right? Okay. So everybody have, I think, what you need to do to answer number three. It's going to be due a week from Tuesday. Just work on that.
And maybe I'll have one of your phone numbers. I'll be your phone number, and I'll call you Monday night, and then you can spread out to everybody.
For a sign, you just have an email to you by Tuesday.
Yeah.
Okay,